Patrick Lamb, partner in the Valerum Law Group of Chicago, Illinois, is a leader in the national discussion concerning value billing. In today's conversation, Patrick talks about short-term and long-term pressures on legal fees resulting from the financial crisis facing our country. Patrick and Ed also discuss the impact that those pressures will have on lawyers' compensation.
Patrick, thanks for joining us again. It's always a pleasure for me to learn from you. And I'd like to start our conversation today with an issue that's on the minds of many people, and that's our financial crises, the collapse of our world, so it seems. Tell me, what impact does this have on legal fees, if any?
Well, Ed, first of all, thanks for having me on your program. It's always good to visit with you. I think that there's going to be both a short-term and a longer-term effect that the financial crises might have on law firm fees, because it's going to have both short- and long-term effects on our clients. Obviously, in the immediate term, there's a great deal of uncertainty about clients' ability to participate in the commercial paper market and have their routine cash flow and payments, and so there might be some disruption in collection of receivables, and there might be some situations where clients that are not the strongest financially may have problems actually securing credit that they need to continue operations. So that suggests that law firms keep a very close eye on their receivables, on the aging of receivables, and their clients' financial condition. I think also from a longer-term standpoint, this is only going to increase the pressure that law departments are under to bring costs down. Most companies respond to difficult financial times by looking to cut costs in whatever way possible. They may cut personnel. And certainly, law departments these days are not immune from those kinds of pressures, at least in the vast majority of companies.
Do you think that general counsel now will think more business-like in the operation of the law department? In other words, rather than hire a large law firm and say, just go handle it, they'll begin to look at the cost-benefit analysis, that they may be willing to take a little bit more risk and thereby reduce a certain amount of lawyer involvement in the analysis?
I think the wise ones are likely to respond in that fashion. And if I can relay a story to you, I was at a client's office meeting with and it's not a client of mine, but it's a prospective client. And I was there making a presentation to their top outside counsel. And one of the things that we spoke about was the need to insulate law firms from risk and how law firms responded to that. And typically they respond by doing more work than is necessary so that they can't be criticized for errors in judgment. And the client's reaction was, well, I don't want that extra layer of protection added on. I'm happy to do whatever it takes to have you not do that because we don't need that. We can operate at 50% or 60% certainty because that's the way we operate in our business. So there's a disconnect between some law departments, at least, and law firms in terms of the degree of risk they're willing to operate under. And law firms are always going to be much higher on that scale, I think, than most corporate law departments, where when you're an inside lawyer, you routinely work on issues where your level of knowledge or level of confidence is.
Yeah, it was interesting because, more than 25 years ago, one general counsel expressed that very same thought to me, and she said that they were able to significantly reduce their cost of litigation without reducing the per hour fee that the law firm was charging, merely by creating a budget and a strategy, and the corporation general counsel saying, you know, instead of 20 depositions, take 9, because the other 11 aren't going to give us anything of significance. We know who they are, what they're going to say, and if we uncover something underneath a rock that we didn't turn over, well, we'll be responsible for it. And, of course, I think that the lawyer would then respond, are you sure? I mean, how can we get that in writing, and how can we make sure that the client, if such a thing happens, doesn't come back to us despite what they say up front?
Well, obviously there's an element of trust here, and I think that the way we approach it, and I think the way lots of lawyers who provide budgets and understand that clients are going to draw lines do it, is you have conversations. If we do this much work, here are things that don't happen, and you know, will you agree, or do you agree that we shouldn't be proceeding with those 11 depositions, for example? Client says yes, and at that point, I don't think anybody reasonably needs to have a higher level of confidence. You're dealing in those situations with sophisticated in-house counsel. The more difficult time is when you're dealing with people inside a company that may not be lawyers or may not be as sophisticated, and you have to make sure that they appreciate the risk that they're assuming by proceeding in a more streamlined fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But the closer people are to the business side of their world, the more they realize that it's a daily occurrence for people to make decisions on less than complete information. And we in the litigation world have been too long living in this fantasy world where you have to know everything, discover everything, and have perfect knowledge or close to it when you're making decisions. That's just not the way the world operates.
Well, you've highlighted both short-term and longer-term concept in terms of the current financial crises. And I guess I intentionally put it into a plural because I'm not sure anybody really can identify one isolated aspect of what's happening in our world today. Are there others that lawyers, outside counsel, need to pay attention to vis-a-vis the fees that they're going to collect or even before that, charge? What's the attitude, for example, of clients to lawyers charging, you know, $400, $500, $800 an hour when corporations are filing bankruptcy, when you hear the rhetoric in Congress that the bailout will be accompanied now by a cap on CEOs' compensation and so forth?
You know, Ed, I don't hear as much complaining about the rates or charge by senior people, because I think most clients find that they get great value from people with substantial experience. I think the more frequent criticism is the rates they're being charged by people fresh out of law school who really don't know anything about the practice of law, don't know anything about the client's business, and for whom every task is something that needs to be started from scratch. So there's almost an inverse relationship in terms of experience and rate, and then how much complaining there is. That said, I do think that there are inside lawyers who are taking a harder look at cases and the assignment of cases. Does this case really need that top of the line law firm, or, you know, can we use somebody who would be from a smaller town and therefore, you know, charging us less money to handle this case, and so forth? So there's ways in terms of the assignment process in which law firms get particular matters where the rate structure may well play a role in how much work people end up with.
Well, I know the Association of Corporate Counsel has a new initiative with which you're very familiar that seeks to reduce the cost from outside counsel. You mentioned in your last comment that maybe some of these companies are now going to look to smaller communities, and I presume from that smaller law firms, in order to get a lower rate structure. My experience has been that if you're a large company, you want to have a large law firm represent you because nobody wants to take the risk of being accused that a negative result occurred because they didn't get the large player involved. Do you see the smaller, and that's always a relative term, but the smaller law firm being able to break in and represent larger companies now? Are large law firms at risk where they weren't before?
Well, there's always a certain core of cases, the ones that have the bet the company label applied to them, that will find a home with a large, well-branded law firm, where people don't want to risk any kind of second-guessing about who they selected and what firm handled the matter. The number of cases that fall into that category and merit that label tends to be somewhat fluid. It'll expand and contract somewhat as the financial fortunes of the company expand and contract. If a company is doing poorly from a financial standpoint and are looking to save money, they may find that the case that last year was a bet the company case really isn't quite as important this year, and so they can afford to have a smaller or less expensive law firm. So I do think that the economic turmoil for at least some companies is bound to influence their selection of counsel, and I think this will continue a trend that has been going on. Smaller firms or firms from smaller markets have an opportunity to compete for at least a certain amount of work, a certain percentage, that before, years ago, would have been handled by the large firm as a matter of routine.
Mm-hmm.
Those firms then can establish a reputation. They can get referrals and recommendations from a satisfied client to somebody else who's in a similar position, and so forth, and they can kind of grow the work that they've begun once they got their foot in that door.
Let me make a transition for a moment between the financial crises and then the legal fees that we've been talking about to compensation for lawyers. In my latest book about law firm fees and compensation, I draw the supposition that I don't think lawyers understand that there is a straight line between the fees they charge and the compensation they take home. What's your thought on this? Do you have any comments on what lawyers really understand and how they appreciate the connection between what they do, what the clients pay, and what they're able to take home to put food on the table?
I think, in general, there's a reason why lawyers went to law school and not to business school, and certainly accounting is one reason, one degree of knowledge that separates lawyers from business people. So any discussion with a lawyer or talking about lawyers and their knowledge of accounting is always fraught with peril. So with that caveat, my experience is that there are lawyers look at, first and foremost, the total revenue number that they generated for their law firm. And it doesn't matter whether those are high realization dollars or low realization dollars. It just matters how many they are. And the reality is, of course, that a lawyer who generates, let's say, $5 million and has a 98% realization rate is more valuable to his firm than a lawyer who generates the same $5 million at an 80% realization rate. But lawyers don't look at net profit on what they generate. And all they know is if I bring in this much money, I want to take home the same amount as the other guy who brought in the same amount of money. And, you know, they end up essentially competing with each other within the same law firm structure. And, you know, so much emphasis these days is placed on that profits per equity partner number that American Lawyer and others tend to use to highlight the success or failings of a law firm. And you want to be, of course, well north of the average, because if you're not ahead of the average for your law firm, there's somehow a suggestion that you're at the low end of the partnership. Nobody, of course, wants that. So the difficulties that lawyers have with compensation are, you know, would fill both books and psychiatrists can if people ever decided to go down that road.
So do you think that the compensation committees still do not pay enough attention to the realization rate and are looking primarily at the gross billings?
I think that, you know, it's of course going to vary from law firm to law firm, and I'm sure that there are some firms that are far more sophisticated in their analysis in terms of the people who are making the decisions, and there's a large gap between that level of sophistication and understanding at the decision maker level versus the average partner generating the work level. But on a decision making level, there are a number of firms with, you know, where I have friends who are involved in the decision making process, and the level of analysis compared with, say, investment banking firms where I also have friends who are involved in the decision-making process is really quite remarkable. Law firms look at individual productivity. Investment banks look at everything from individual productivity to group productivity to firm productivity and have kind of have ways to weight the various priorities that the firm has established. If this area needs to grow, they'll provide more weight in that particular area and so forth. They're much more strategic in their use of compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Law firms, it's much more of a reward process for last year's effort rather than a look forward to the future.
That's an interesting distinction, the distinction between strategic and reward as a philosophical approach to compensation.
You know, law firms, it's very much a you get what you reward. So, for example, if you're rewarding hours, you get hours. If you're rewarding billings, the people who are able to do so are going to get billings. And there's really less analysis done about, well, we want to penetrate this particular market, and so how do we go about doing that? And let's say it's going to be a three-year plan. Well, we can't penalize people for the first 2 years and then expect them to then make it all up in year three. So we've got to have a plan that will carry us through that three-year cycle. Law firms just don't tend to look forward that far and make those kinds of strategic investments, at least not law firms that I'm familiar with.
Right. Well, Patrick, I want to thank you very much for joining us again. Conversation today, I think, is just so much on point with what's happening in our world, and I value and appreciate your perspective on it. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Ed. It's always a great pleasure to visit with you.
You have been listening to a LawBiz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about LawBiz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.